Hello and welcome to the Pain Cave. I'm your host, Jay Friedman. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Tonight we have what is hopefully going to become a new, regularly reoccurring type of episode. I have my good friend, Philip Vondra, here. What we're going to try to do is, on a regular or semi-regular basis, have some discussions about recent ultra running results and stories that are exciting us and previews of upcoming races. This is really not going to be scientific at all. It's mostly just going to be an excuse for Phil and I to get together and drink some beers and talk about running. What we're hoping to do is do this on a probably once a month type basis so we can hit some of the recent results and stories and previews of some upcoming races. Since this is obviously our first one, we've got a lot of kind of ground to cover. We're going to almost do a little bit of an overview of the first 4 months of the year, 3.5 months of the year, in terms of ultra running and what we're excited about going forward. So first off, let's welcome Phil Vondra. Phil is a former world-class rower, also a tri-geek who suffered in triathlons and on the roads for many years until we finally turned him on to the joys of ultra running. He is a fellow beer lover, more of a beer lover than I am, actually. And now that he's an ultra runner, is proving incredibly adept on the trails and is a two-time national age group champion at once at 50 miles and once at 100K. Am I right?
Actually, twice at 50
miles. Twice at 50 miles. Okay. And is aging up next year. So look out, everyone in the 50 to 54 age group. Phil, welcome to the Pain Cave.
All right. Thanks, Jay. It's good to be here. Nice to spend a little bit of time off the trails with you.
Yeah. And I'm pretty excited because we got a good run in this morning, covered some good ground, and definitely earned a couple of beers. What am I drinking right now that you poured us out of your growler?
This is a fairly local brew. They're from Fishkill, which is pretty close. It's a Sloop. It's a juice bomb. It's like a cloudy IPA. Pretty tasty. Drink it pretty regularly. Just got it in town in a growler, and yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, Sloop makes good stuff, and yeah, this is good. It's an East Coast IPA, but yeah, it's got a little bit of kind of a fruity nose and a little bit of a fruity finish to it. I like it.
Yeah, it's like their kind of flagship beer. I think it's one of the ones they kind of started off with and kept it going. But yeah, it's certainly good for the rehydration after that run this morning.
All right, we'll suck that down, and then we'll break out another. All right. Like I said, we've got a lot of ground to cover. This will probably be one of the longer episodes that we do in this format, just because, like I said, it's been a few months of the season and things are kind of starting to heat up a little bit. And we wanted to kind of go through and give an overview of what's happened so far and what we've been talking about out on our run. So bear with us here. And some of the subsequent ones of these will probably be a bit shorter. You know, the biggest stories, at least domestically, in the first part of the year is generally the golden ticket races. Everybody trying to get their spots at Western States usually brings out the top names. And this year we were down a golden ticket race. Gorge Waterfalls, I guess, was canceled because of trail damage. And rather than add in or find another golden ticket race to kind of take the place of it, the Western States organizers just decided to go with 5 golden ticket races this year instead of 6. So only 10 tickets will be awarded or were awarded. And in fact, as we'll probably touch on, there may only be 9 tickets for the women. Excuse me. This is my problem, is when I start drinking, I start burping into the microphone. Okay, so our 5 golden ticket races, obviously, Bandera 100K, the Sean O'Brien 100K, Black Canyon 100K, the Georgia Death Race, which is the only East Coast golden ticket race, almost 72 miles or so, and the Lake Sonoma 50 mile, the only less than 100K golden ticket race, and the only golden ticket race that is actually not a Western States lottery qualifier, and that's mostly just by tradition as far as I can tell. You know, Sonoma is, why don't we start there maybe, just because I found it interesting this year. Sonoma, not only just because it's a golden ticket race, but just because of where it falls on the calendar and where it falls geographically in kind of the Northern California area where there's obviously a huge trail scene and a lot of ultra runners reside, generally tends to just bring in a fantastic field. And that's usually one of the, I think, the fields of the year. And, you know, some great runners there again this year. To me, I felt like the field was a little bit sparser than it's been in previous years in terms of just a pack of true elites. In previous years at Sonoma, I feel like there are 10 to 15 people coming in who can really have a chance at winning and at snagging one of those golden tickets. And I feel like this year there were obviously some great names, but if I had looked at the start list beforehand, I would have said there's six guys here that I think are going to compete, and kind of the same on the women's side. Were you a little surprised by that? Anything kind of stand out at you there?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, I think it wasn't as deep as normal, but, you know, with these races, the quality at the very top was there. You know, I mean, just look at the names. You know, all the super fast people were there. But, yeah, not quite as deep as other years, but still a really exciting race.
Yeah, for sure you definitely had some names there. Jim Walmsley running basically solo time trial off the front, breaking his own course record by about 10 minutes. Very impressive. Pretty much exactly what we've come to expect from Jim. You know, the other storyline on the men's side from Sonoma was his kind of training buddies as part of the Coconino Cowboy group. And we'll get into that, I'm sure, when we talk about just the year so far in general. There were a couple of them left that still needed to get their ticket, as their stated goal was all to race together at Western States this year. And they both got it. Jared Hazen and Eric Sensman came in second and fourth. Jim already in because of his Ultra Trail World Tour tickets. And Mario Mendoza, who was third, had already punched his ticket at Bandera, which was the first race of the year, and therefore he did not need the spot. So Jared and Eric both punching their tickets and joining Jim and Tim Frericks and Cody Reed. So all five of those guys will be in Squaw Valley this summer. Any surprise on your part when you saw that? I mean, the fact that they kind of called this as their goal for the first part of the year and somehow came through and all five of them got tickets, you know, maybe not surprising because of the talent involved, but still an impressive feat and just logistically pretty impressive.
Yeah, and you know, it's ultra running, right? Anything can happen. It's great to have these plans and you know, say, you know, you want to run these races and get these golden tickets, but you just never know what happens to people. People get sick, people have a bad day, people run off course, you know, all kinds of things can happen. But it's going to be pretty exciting for these guys down in Flagstaff, you know, with this great group of runners they have there, all going to states. You know, it's going to see some exciting racing going on there. But I'm happy for them. And I think Jim, I mean, what a great race he had. I mean, 5:51. I mean, that guy was flying. It's nice to see him running there with no real pressure. He had his ticket, you know, went out there, he went to run fast and have some fun. And, you know, look what he did, 5:51. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. But again, we're almost spoiled by Jim. And I've talked about this with other people on the show before. It's, you know, we kind of come to expect a course record every time he goes out. And he really rarely disappoints, especially, you know, at 100K or less. And, you know, I don't know how long he can keep it up, but he certainly has shown no signs of slowing down at this point. And, you know, obviously in a couple of months when we start talking more about Western States, we'll get into, you know, what his strategy might be and you know, whether or not he's, you know, kind of figured out a little bit more about the 100-mile distance. It's going to be very exciting to see, you know, what exactly he's going to do. And he's run it in some odd ways, some people have said, the last couple of years. And that'll be interesting with him just having his teammates there. The women's side at Sonoma, I think I wanted to touch on a little bit as well. Keely Henninger with a fantastic win, a pretty dominant win, actually. Her margin of victory, I think, approaching 20 to 30 minutes, if I remember correctly. Turned down her golden ticket to compete instead at Lavaredo in Italy, which I'm sure we'll touch on in a later episode as well, but is, you know, becoming a more important overseas race, kind of rivaling some of the other big races in Europe. The second place finisher, Taylor Nowlan, we'll touch on. I wanted to talk about a little bit when we get into some of the different storylines from the first part of the year. Also turned down the ticket. It was her second golden ticket race of the year. She was in position, obviously, for a ticket. She declined. It sounds like she's planning on going to Lavaredo as well. So Camelia Mayfield, third place, did take the ticket. Gina Slaby, the 24-hour, 100-mile specialist, seemed like she was going to take it, but she turned it down. And as of this time of this recording, we're waiting to hear if Amy Leadham, who is the fifth place finisher, is actually going to accept or decline. It's not 100% clear yet. If she declines, that's as far as it rolls down, and we actually don't have a second ticket winner from Lake Sonoma, which would, I mean, to me at least, be a shock.
Yeah, it'd be a real shame if someone didn't take that ticket. But, yeah, I mean, impressive results. I mean, Keely Henninger, I mean, a great race, super fast time. You know, the course record there is 7.08, and she did 7.13. I think it's the second or third fastest time on the course, so yep. An impressive run.
On a hot
you know,
day.
It was a hot day. The course was in better condition, I think, than other years. You know, it didn't have that much mud on it, some wet patches, but yeah, it was hot. So, I mean, that's an impressive time, strong run, and you know, good for her. She set some goals this year, and going out to Laboreto, you know, hopefully she has a great race there.
And you know, some you know, well-known names in the back half of the top 10, a couple of surprises that I don't know. Just a couple of surprises. I mean, Megan Laws is never going to, I'm never going to say it's a surprise to see her in the top 10. And she was 10th, you know, somehow still getting this done in her early 50s at a truly world-class level. But I was a little bit surprised just because she is not a 50-mile specialist, especially as she gets up in age. I mean, she has Western States figured out, and I wouldn't bet against her to be top 10 there again for God knows how long. But to me, a 100-mile specialist in her early 50s, I'm surprised that she's pulling out a top 10 at, you know, what is nominally the most competitive 50-miler of the year. That was a surprise and spoke a little bit probably the difficulty of conditions to me. Nicole Burma in 9th place, kind of an unknown, and that was a surprise to me. I hadn't seen her name before.
Yeah, it was kind of cool to look down some of the results and see some of those people there. You know, it's nice to see, you know, a hot day like that, people racing smart, you know, people... you know, just making sure they're not overdoing it in the hot conditions.
Yeah, and just moving up through the field.
Just certainly the experience just, you know, showed. And certainly I like to see the higher age group people doing well.
Right. All right. So leaving Sonoma aside for a second, let's look back on the Golden Ticket season as a whole. And let's look at some storylines related to the Golden Ticket races. For you, looking across the five Golden Ticket races, give me some of your either one or two most under-the-radar performances. I mean, certainly people were talking about Jim's course record and, you know, just a great solo run. The Coconino Cowboys were obviously a storyline that got a lot of play. You know, people talking about Mario at Bandera getting, you know, his measure of revenge on that race after having to drop out the last 2 years while leading both years, I think. And he came back and won his national championship there, punched his ticket. What were some of the kind of under-the-radar performances that stood out to you from the Golden Ticket Series?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I look through some of these results, I mean, also, let's not forget about Bob Shebest. You know, I mean, he had a shocker in Bandera last year.
Right.
And he's come through
which
and
was,
got his ticket.
Which was pretty much mostly your fault, I think.
Well, I did see him running past me going the wrong way, and I did shout to him and say, have they changed the course this year? But he just kept going. So I did my best to try and stop him. But great to see him get that ticket. I mean, the frustration level for him last year at Bandera must have been, you know, through the roof. So
yeah.
Good to see him get that. That was nice. And, you know, there was a real battle there at Georgia Death Race. I mean, they were close, second, third, and fourth.
Yes.
I think separated 5 minutes between the three guys.
Right. And, you know, and really kind of racing back and forth over the last couple of miles.
Yeah.
It
and,
like.
You know, I think there's a big climb near to the finish. There's some descending. There's some steps. You know, at that point in a tough race like that, anything can happen. But, I mean, he wanted that ticket. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Very, very good performance.
Yep. Yep. I had that on my list. I had a couple other kind of under the radar performances from Georgia Death Race as well. Andrew Miller kind of making a comeback. We haven't heard his name since really 2016, Western States 2016, when he was the surprise winner after Jim ran off course, just running a, you know, very, very smart race and, you know, was had come into that race as, you know, a highly regarded runner, but a bit of an unknown with not a ton, you know, he's very young and not a ton of racing under his belt. He, 2016, got his ticket again at Georgia Death Race and then the win there and kind of missed pretty much all last year with some injuries and wasn't competing much and was really flying under the radar and came in and had a pretty dominating win at Georgia Death Race that, to me, got even a little bit less attention because of the great race that you had for that second ticket. And like you said, the fact that Bob Shebest was a little bit snake bit last year and him getting the ticket, I feel like, was a bigger story than the fact that, you know, now the 2016 Western States champ, who you know, everyone had kind of forgotten about is going to be toeing the line again. And that was a little bit of a kind of an underplayed story. The other one I wanted to mention was Eliza LaPierre's just totally dominating win by, I think her victory margin was close to 2 hours. And, you know, she's going to be, as usual, somebody to watch at Western States as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Andrew Miller just got out ahead, you know, just got a good lead, stayed out there, just ran super strong. You know, he was almost an hour ahead of second place. But, yeah, Eliza as well. I mean, she was 2 hours ahead. Both of them broke the course records. Andrew Miller and Eliza broke the course records. Amazing runs. You know, the course looks super tough. That was impressive.
Yeah, for sure. All right, give me, what was the biggest surprise or surprises that kind of stuck out to you among the Golden Ticket races this year? Some kind of unexpected results, either good or bad. I guess I was mostly thinking about good, but...
You know, I think there was one other thing I wanted to mention. Was it Jared Hansen? You know,
Jared Hansen, yeah.
Hansen, he's had some injuries.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think he's... His second place there, I think, is great. You know, he had some quite serious injuries, I think, some fractured vertebrae and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I think he wasn't running for quite a long time trying to get on top of these. So that's a pretty solid comeback.
Yeah, he's another one that we didn't hear much at all from last year. He was at Bandera in 2016 when we were both there for the first time and was out with the leaders and I think dropped after the first lap. And then I don't remember seeing anything from him in the past 18 months or so. Like you said, battling with some various things. And for him to come back and basically said, yeah, I want the ticket and go out and get it, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was, I mean, you know, he's had a great run there, but also what he's done to get that great run, you know, in terms of overcoming the injury. You know, the injuries, I think it was more than one,
right.
pretty serious injuries. You know, it's good to see that. I mean, it shows that, you know, if you do get injured, you know, you take your time, you work on it, you can come back. And the guy's, you know, obviously got a lot of talent. So that's impressed me as well.
And he'll be a factor at States. I mean, he's got two top five finishes and, you know, he knows the course. And he'll, if he's healthy, he'll be ready to go. So that'll be interesting. All right, give me your biggest surprises or surprise.
The thing, I'm not sure it's necessarily a surprise, but the thing that impressed me was Courtney DeWalter at Sean O'Brien.
Yeah, I definitely mean, not a surprise,
great,
but definitely
great
impressive.
Run. Good to see. You know, things are definitely heating up now for States. You know, some good performances. You know, it's really getting exciting. I mean, this Golden Ticket race series, it really adds a lot of you know, kind of it fuels the fire for States. You know,
right,
you get the top 10 from the year before going in, and then you get these other runners that just show, you know, the quality at these races. It's really you know, an impressive series of races.
Yep. My biggest surprise was, as I mentioned before, Taylor Nallen, young up and coming runner on the women's side, was third at Sean O'Brien, and you know, behind that very impressive performance from Courtney. Courtney was fourth overall. Kate Elliott in second place was fifth overall. And then Taylor was seventh overall. So only three men in front of her, as well as the two women. If my math is right there, I might not be correct. Maybe it's four men. But and then comes back and grabs second at Sonoma to Keeley, you know, kind of out of nowhere. I wasn't real familiar with her going in, and for her to place that highly twice. And then the second surprise was that she declined the ticket. I found that very surprising, but it seems like she's pretty focused on Lavaredo.
Yeah, she obviously likes you know, competitive races as well. I mean, she's put it out there this year.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, going to Sean O'Brien and then to Lake Sonoma and doing well at both of them. Yeah, you know, you're right. The Courtney and Kate Elliott were fourth and fifth. Impressive. And the winner there on the men's side was a Florian Neuschwander. I might be wrong.
That was another name.
Interesting.
Not terribly, I had him down as a big surprise as well.
Yep. An interesting. And he ran a fast time. I think that it was the fourth fastest on that course.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive stuff. German guy. I think he was like a track and marathon guy. But fourth fastest time. I mean, let's see how he does. Who knows? But good solid performance at Sean O'Brien from him.
Yeah, that'll be interesting coming in, because obviously he's got the speed to do well at States. You know, States, not the easiest course and event to do as a rookie. It seems like it takes a couple of tries to kind of get it right. And also, having been there a couple times, you know, not running, but in a crew or medical capacity. It's got to take some adjustment to just the scene itself. I mean, it's a totally different scene from anything really in this country. I mean, comparable only, I would think, to some of the big overseas races like UTMB or something like that. And it does take some practice, I think, to figure out how not to get swept up in everything that's going on in the days before and just, you know, everyone's kind of congregated. And that can play with your head if you're not quite ready for it. So as a rookie coming in, it'll be an interesting challenge for him. And, you know, the Euros in general have a good track record of running well at states and in the, you know, middle to top part of the top 10, but usually not their first year. Again, it's the kind of thing that takes a little while and takes a couple of tries. So it'll be interesting to see how he does there. And like I said, we'll get into that at a later date, I'm sure. Ooh, excuse me. All right. I'm going to finish off this beer in just a second. Any other kind of storylines that caught your attention from the Golden Ticket series? Anything else that, I mean, we mentioned I had Bob Shebest down as just kind of a great storyline, as somebody who people were really rooting for and kind of dug deep and pulled out a ticket there. The big storyline for me, just the overriding one, was, as mentioned, the Coconino Cowboys being that training group of buddies in Flagstaff. So it's for those who don't know, which if you're listening to this episode, I'm sure you know, because why else would you be listening to this episode? But Jim Wamsley, Eric Sensman, Jared Hazen, Cody Reed, and Tim Frericks, of course, who won Black Canyon in rather dominating fashion to get his ticket. You know, they basically said going into the series, they were going to support each other at these various races and all try to get to the starting line of Western States together. And somehow they did it. And to me, that was kind of the theme that ran through the whole kind of early part of the year.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I noticed that was kind of cool was that Courtney, again, you know, 2 weeks later, she goes to Black Canyon and comes second there.
Yep.
I mean, 2 weeks between tough 100K races. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool to see.
Yep. Elsa McDonald, who did beat Courtney at Black Canyon, like you said, in the second leg of that, and was second overall to Tim in that race. Not a surprise for me, because I've been familiar with her for a while, but just maybe a surprise just to how impressive that performance was, taking out Courtney, who, you know, I'm sure was somewhat tired, but still is one of the great runners in our sport today. And people were, that was a good storyline too, to see her get some recognition for some of her great running and to see her, you know, get her ticket as well.
Yeah. And I think she broke the course record at Black Canyon. I think so. 8:53, I think, which was good. I think she was second overall. Is that
second overall?
Second overall. Yeah. Impressive. Yeah. But course record there. She's obviously running well. And I think Black Canyon, I think last year it was pretty bad weather. I think this year they had a good weather. I think last year was really wet, quite muddy, and this year was a better conditions, but impressive racing from her.
Anything else strike your fancy in the Golden Ticket series? Any disappointments or letdowns or kind of things
not
that
really.
You weren't that happy about?
Not really. It would have been nice to see an East Coast guy. I saw Jared Burdick in a Bandera.
Yeah,
third
not,
place
not
there.
Much, yeah.
I would love to have seen him get a golden ticket. That would have been great. Talented, fast guy, nice guy. He just missed out, so you know, hopefully next year he'll get one. And that was it, really. I mean, I think everything, you know, just some really amazing performances. And then, you know, Lake Sonoma, Jim breaking the course record there.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Some great performances to be sure, and some really great racing at the very front. I was a little bit disappointed just by the kind of maybe the depth of the field in some of the races, like we kind of alluded to at the beginning. Sonoma didn't go 10 or 15 deep or 20 deep like it often does with real stars. Oftentimes, like I said, you look at the start list of some of these races and there's 10 or 15 or 20 guys and women. And I feel like we didn't get that really in any of the ticket races, not to say there weren't great runners, not to say that these weren't great performances, but when I sat down earlier and was looking at the top 10 to 15 for all these different races, you know, hindsight obviously is always 20/20, but I felt like if I had looked at the names going in at the very beginning or before the races, I could have predicted a lot of who would have gotten these tickets. I think there wasn't, other than some of the names we mentioned, there weren't a lot of shocks. I mean, the fact that the Flagstaff guys were able to basically say, you know, this is what we're doing, and then go out and do it and not have, you know, some of the other big names swoop in and steal all these tickets from them, you know, speaks a little bit to maybe just a lack of some variability to some of these results. I remember when we were at Bandera and we were warming up the day before and talking about some of the names, and that was a very good field there. But yeah, I mean, good. the two people that we picked out as having the best chance, I think, were Mario and Cody, and there you go, 1 and 2.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it's just good for them for coming through, but also, you know, maybe just not quite, I don't want to say not as exciting, but, you know, maybe not quite as unpredictable as we might have hoped. But, you know, that's nitpicking. Okay. So that's the Golden Ticket Series for 2018. And like I said, as we get closer to states, we'll certainly be talking more about those people, and we'll do a preview and see who we like going in. I'm going to take a quick break and grab a beer. So just bear with us momentarily. Is there more in there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. I was going to break open another one. Hang on. All right, good. Yeah, fill me up. Okay, let's get into some of the other kind of big races from the first three and a half months of the year. Some other big results that kind of stood out, and maybe some other storylines that we were talking about. Plenty of big races going on, both domestically and internationally. I wanted to touch on a few of them. The main international one I wanted to talk about was Tarawera, which really was a banner day for U.S.-based runners. Tarawera, the Ultra Trail World Tour, that's what happens when I'm on my second beer, 100K or 102K out in Australia, which has been just getting some fantastic fields in the past few years.
I think it's New Zealand, actually.
New Zealand, I'm sorry. Well done.
Same part of the world, right?
Yeah, right next to each other. Top two men, top two women, both American. That was,
yeah.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
Yeah, and uphill year, I think it was raining from start to finish. Looked very tough out there. Nice to see Dylan Bowman winning that one. That was impressive. And, you know, it looked kind of tight at the start of that race, and he gradually pulled away. It's good to see him running well. And then Kelly Wolf winning the women's. That was great. But, good performance from the Americans out there.
Yeah, and Amanda Basham coming second for the women.
Yep.
She'll be interesting to see how she does this year, too, because she was...
She's doing UROC, I think,
she is doing UROC.
In 2 weeks.
She was absolutely on fire at the first half of last year, and I think picked up a little injury after UROC, leading into states, tried to start states, and I don't think was able to make it through. But she seems to be back in form, obviously. She will be at UROC, and that'll be exciting there. What are some other results that stood out to you from earlier in the year?
I think Hurt 100, I think is kind of interesting. I mean,
yeah,
Avery went out there and crushed, but the thing that I still can't really get over at that race is that people running into aid stations thinking that there was a nuclear missile attack coming to Hawaii.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, let's face it, ultra running's hard enough. Running into an aid station and being told, you know, what would you like? Do you want, you know, a pretzel or a coconut water or a Gatorade. And by the way, we're under a nuclear attack.
Or a hazmat suit, maybe.
You know, let's be honest, to keep running, I mean, I don't know what's going through people's minds. I mean, pretty unsettling. But, again, Avery winning out there, that was cool. Just a tough year. Getting that news on the course, I don't know. I don't know how I would take it.
I don't know. How do you react to that? I don't even know how you could even possibly begin to get your head around it. Very, very impressive, dominating win by Avery. Darcy Pisu on the women's side, also dominating win. I won a little bit of beer on that one because Glenn Redpath bet me. He gave me the field against Sabrina Stanley. So that was an easy bet. Sabrina did well, I think was third or fourth. But, you know, if you're going to give me Darcy and everybody else against Sabrina, I'll take that bet. And so, Glenn, I'm going to collect. Don't worry. What else? Oh, well, we'll get into that. Some East Coast races with some results I wanted to mention. Mount Mitchell, a race near and dear to my own heart that I've run three times. I love that race down in Black Mountain, North Carolina. Morgan Elliott, a native son of North Carolina, came back from the West Coast and just put up a dominating performance. Broke the course record by 15 to 20 minutes. And I think his margin of victory was something like 40 minutes over a 40-mile race. Very impressive. Eliza Lapierre, her second win at that race on the women's side. That's one of the really great, maybe a little less well-known East Coast trail races, but has had tons of great runners take shots at that one over the years. And really some two very impressive results there. Moab Red Hot, the 55K. Some great performances there. A really good field for a very early season race. And they've had some great races or some great fields there and great competitors there in the past. Anthony Costales setting a course record there was a good one. And Kat Bradley kicking off her season as the defending Western States champ with a big win there. Two other ones that I wanted to touch on. And what struck me about these races, not that I was surprised by the field strength, but really looking at the results, rivaled, if not surpassed, every single Western or every single Golden Ticket race this year. Way Too Cool and Chuckanut 50K, which are, yeah, are really the two, if not the two most important domestic 50Ks on the calendar. They're, yep, certainly in the top three to four. But the field strength at both of those and both the men's and the women's side, I thought were at least as good, like I said, or if not better than every single Golden Ticket race. I mean, on the men's side for Way Too Cool, you can just, in the top 10, Max King, Jared Hazen, Ryan Gelfi, Matt Flaherty, David Roach. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah,
the women's
guys.
Side, you had Lottie Albertson-Jenkins, who won Chuckanut last year, came back and ran away with this one. Almost got caught at the end, but, you know, led pretty early on. Great win there. Bethany Peterson, Amy Leadham, who we spoke about earlier, Corinne Malcolm, another great name down at seventh. I mean, great fields. Chuckanut, I wrote this down. I mean, the top eight at Chuckanut, Cole Watson, Patrick Smythe, Patty O'Leary, Dave Laney, Ryan Back, Dave Riddle, Keith Laverty, and Uli Steidel. That's, I mean, that's as good as anything else we saw in the early season. The women's, yep, side, Keeley again, Anne-Marie Madden, a great racer from up north, Gina Slaby again, Ellie Greenwood, fourth place there, Sarah Bard, who's been top 10 at Comrades, Camelia Mayfield, another Golden Ticket winner. I mean, to kind of emphasize this how strong this field was, Nicole Burma, who we spoke about earlier, who was ninth at Sonoma, was 17th at this race. So, yeah. I mean, just...
Very high level of competition.
Yeah, I couldn't get over how impressive the fields were at both of those races.
I think also at Way Too Cool, it was kind of an epic year, rain and mud. It was really tough conditions. And I think Max King beat Jared Hazen by just 33 seconds. And yeah, I think he overtook him kind of late in the race.
Yes.
I mean, it was a real battle. You know, amazing tight race.
All right, let's do some storylines. You got any big surprises that you noticed from the first part of the year here?
Just some things that I thought were kind of cool. Carl Meltzer, I mean, 40th 100-mile win at Lone Star 100.
Unbelievable.
He's won a 100-mile race for 18 years now in a row.
Unreal.
A machine, you know, absolute. And that's a tough race, at Lone Star 100. I had a look at it, and there's a lot of climbing on it. You know, and it was hot. It's very, very, you know, amazing. 40 100-mile wins. I'm not sure if anyone's even close to that.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so. I thought that was impressive. Also, Magda going out to Marathon des Sables and winning that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's impressive. That desert racing is hard.
I had that down as my biggest under-the-radar story of the first part of the year.
Right.
I mean, who was even talking about that?
Yeah.
And Magda, I mean, it's hard to be surprised by anything Magda does because she's so fantastic. But stage racing and in that heat, I mean, that's a different animal. That's a totally different beast than what she's used to, as, you know, especially coming off of a road background as a marathoner and really a track background before that. That's way outside of her comfort zone.
I think they carry like a pretty heavy pack on that
race
as well. It's not a light pack at all. You know, it's kind of, you know, you have a lot of mandatory gear, a lot of water to carry. You know, it's a different, you know, like you say, multi-day type racing. So, you know, she's adaptable. She's obviously a great runner.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was her first attempt. And to win that, it's impressive.
Very impressive.
Good.
Very impressive. Any other surprises, under the radar type stories? I had a couple of other under the radar picks.
I think one under the radar, I don't know how many people know, but the Wild Oak Trail 100 race in Virginia. It's like a loop race, kind of, you know, self-supported. Mm-hmm. There's no aid stations. You have no pacers, no crew. John Kelly won that, broke 24 hours there.
Right.
It looks like a kind of cool race. I got to say, you know, I was looking for sort of random races out there, and that looks hard.
And
you know,
John Kelly, a former Barclays finisher, obviously, is going to be made for something like that.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, but I think that... you know, the closest kind of finishes behind that were, you know, sort of 26, 27, 28 hours. So to break 24 is super impressive from him.
Right. A couple other under-the-radar ones for me. Both the winners at Rocky Raccoon. Both repeat winners, actually. Ronnie Delzer on the men's side. Sabrina Little, rather, on the women's side. Both running some pretty impressive times in difficult conditions. A muddy year, a wet year. There was a hurricane,
changed
obviously.
Changed the course this year. It's four loops of 25 miles this time.
Yep. And so for them both to go well under 15 hours and really win. And I mean, they were 1 and 2 overall in very dominating fashion. Third place, I think, was over 17 hours. So many hours behind.
Yeah. Sabrina, that's her fourth win, I think, now at Rocky Raccoon. She's great at that race. I mean, she really can has got that course dialed, you know.
What's amazing about Sabrina is she's still so young. She got her start so early. She's been doing this for years now and has just a world-class resume, and yet still young and still cranking them out. And you know, she could be doing this for a long time. When she's finally done, she's going to have an unbelievable career. Not that she hasn't already. Other ones under the radar for me, Umstead, a good top two battle at Umstead, an East Coast favorite. Olivier LeBlanc, fresh off of a 48-hour world record, or American record rather, last year, comes in and runs 14:04, chased to the end by our friend Jim Sweeney, 14:07, a PR for him. Really good, impressive performances there. And the other one that I, you know, can't believe, well, not that I can't believe isn't getting more attention because it was on the track, but I don't know if you saw Tyler Andrews' track 50K world record.
I saw that. Yeah, that was pretty amazing. Yeah. 245 246,
which
right.
is absolutely, and now for a 220 marathoner, maybe not the biggest deal in the world, but still very, very impressive. I mean, to put that in perspective, Josh Cox took multiple stabs at the world and American 50K records. And Josh was a 216 or 217 marathoner, I think. And, you know, the closest he got was, I think, 248. So, you know, 246 for a 220 marathoner, I mean, for anyone, obviously, but very, very impressive, and will probably be forgotten by the time I'm done with this sentence, unfortunately, because that's the way that track racing and road racing goes sometimes these days. Okay. Anything else from the first part of the year? Any letdowns, disappointments? I have one big one.
I guess for me, you know, I would like to have seen someone finish Barclay. I would like to see some of the women get some at least fun runs. You know, I was kind of hoping that, you know, this would, you know, we'd get some finishes at Barclay, get some fun runs. But I think the conditions there, you know, Gary Robbins, I mean, who isn't rooting for that guy to finish that race? You know, he had the epic last year. I mean, it's just an insane story. But in those conditions, I just think, you know, you have to be absolutely 100%. There is almost zero margin for error at that race. And you get a really tough year. They had snow, they had rain. You know, it makes it so much harder in those conditions. It just mentally unsettles you, physically pushes you beyond, you know, anything that you have. And, you know, it just was carnage there this year.
Yeah. There's no margin for error there in a good year. And this was Agreed. Far from a good year. And kind of when you saw the weather forecast going in, it was almost like, why even bother? Like, there's no way anyone's...
Yeah, totally.
You know, it was a Herculean effort to get through a fun run for him, I thought. But a little bit of a letdown. I wanted to talk a little bit about Barclay. And when I spoke to Rich Heffron the other day and for another episode, we talked a little bit about Barclay. I had a couple of questions that I kind of wanted to address with you because you're more of a Barclay fan than I am. You're kind of dialed into that whole world. And I've heard a lot of people complaining about this now. Is Barclay like overexposed, do you think? Is it overhyped? Is there a difference between overhyped and overexposed? I kind of feel like it's, you know, maybe not. I don't want to say it's overhyped because I still think a finish there is just one of the great feats in ultra running or ultra hiking or whatever you want to say. But I do think it's become a little bit overexposed. I think the fact that, you know, even the casual people off the street are talking about, or at least have heard of Barkley, and now, you know, I almost don't want footage from the course. You know, that was part of the appeal, is that they're going to go off and you're going to see them every 12 to 14 hours, and that's pretty much it. And the fact that, you know, there's press there now and there's video from, you know, some of these climbs, and to me, it kind of takes away from it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly it's right up there on the media's radar, but, you know, it's only 2 weeks a year, you know, the week before,
right,
the time of, and the week after, and, like, it's already forgotten by, you know, a lot of people, but it's still, the people that are big fans of it, it's still on their radar. You know, they made some footage on the course this year. It didn't really bother me. I mean, it was okayed by Laz, and if it's okay with him, then it's okay, you
right.
know. But I think it's, you know, it's the freak show of the ultra world, really.
I don't know that we needed a freak show is the thing, right?
Yeah, people run off into the darkness, into the mist, into the thorns, and who knows what comes back, you know? It's like, see ya, hopefully we'll see you again.
All right, two more questions I had for you about Barkley. First one is, has it ruined Gary Robbins?
No, I think he's a very, very tough individual, but he's solely focused on it now.
Has it defeated him? What I mean is, has just, I don't want to say obsession, although he might even say obsession, but that's his career now. And he's had a fantastic career. I would have been happier to see him keep racing. You know, he's still young-ish. He's younger than me. I would have been happy to see him kind of doing some other races these last couple of years. This is all he's done for the last 3 years, you know, and, you know, he's accomplished so much in this sport and has nothing to prove.
19-hour finishes at her.
Yeah,
you know.
He has nothing to prove to anybody. And if this is what he wants to do, great. But to me, this seems like, other than Barkley, it's the end of his career as a competitive athlete. It just doesn't seem like he has the interest or the passion to do anything else.
Possibly. I do think, though, that it is kind of his sole focus now. I mean, I think that maybe it's consuming him. Who knows? I mean, you know, he's a super experienced guy. I mean, he's going to keep trying to do this race, but he's going to fit other stuff in as well. I think he organizes a whole bunch of races and, you know, does a lot of, like, volunteering, marking courses. You know, I think that it's not going to kind of totally consume him, but I think when the time comes to train for it, he will have, you know, an ultimate focus, and he probably starts, you know, September, October kind of time, you know, ramping up the mileage, ramping up the vert. I think he's going to be fine, but certainly he's going to have a few more cracks at it. He'll get it done, I think.
The other question I had for you, this, you know, doesn't bother me at all, and I don't really care that much, but I saw this question kind of raised on social media. Do you think there should be a limit to how many times people can attempt Barkley? Somebody was pointing out this is, you know, Gary's third time, obviously. It was Jamil's fourth time, I think.
I think fourth, yeah. Maybe even fifth. And no, I think fourth, yeah.
Again, I don't care. It's not like I would ever try to get into that race. And they can try this as many times as they want. But some people seem to be kind of getting sick of of these people, you know, attempting it multiple times. And you know, people have attempted it plenty of times, obviously. It takes a few times to just get the whole idea of it down. Do you think there should be a limit, or just keep sending them back and you take your as many cracks as you want?
I think if people are, you know, having a decent race there, if you like, they're getting, you know, three loops done, four loops, I think that's fine to keep coming back. But if you're on your fifth year and we've done is one loop each time, I think it's probably time to, you know, go away and think about either your training program or think maybe move on to other races.
A different goal.
Yeah. But I think guys like, you know, those guys, I think they're getting enough loops in where they're getting, you know, close to completing. I don't think anyone, I'm not sure if anyone's ever done it first attempt. Maybe there's a couple of the guys there did. But I'm sure that
off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone who's done it on their first try.
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone has.
Maybe at the very, very beginning in the earlier years, but certainly in the last 10 years, I can't think of anybody like that. So yeah, no, it certainly takes a couple of tries for sure. All right, enough Barkley's. Anything else from the first part of the year? There were a couple other issues, a couple other just kind of stories that had come up that I wanted to just discuss and get your opinion on. One of them is what was being referred to online as Kenyafornia, which was this effort to try to bring a couple of Kenyans, elite or sub-elite Kenyan marathoners, to California to run Lake Sonoma. And there was a big crowdfunding campaign to see if they could kind of cover the costs to get them out to Lake Sonoma. It ultimately didn't come off. It doesn't sound like it didn't happen because of lack of funds or anything like that, but it sounded like one of the runners came down with a little bit of an injury and the other one got offered a kind of a prestigious road marathon spot somewhere and decided to do that instead. But this, I can't imagine this is going away. This seems like something that is going to be revisited again, maybe for North Face or something like that. What are your thoughts? Is this something that we're going to keep seeing? And what are your thoughts on it? I mean, as a fan of the sport and as a competitor.
I think it'd be great. I mean, I think it will be, you know, amazing to see some of these kind of, I think the word that we spoke of earlier was B-level runners, 215 marathon pace runners. B-level hard Kenyans. To use that that B-level word and 215 marathon in the right. In the same sentence. But I think it'd be great to see some of these guys getting involved in the ultra scene, trail scene.
Yeah.
You know, especially on the kind of smoother courses, you know, maybe not the burly mountain races, but seeing some of these guys hammering North Face, Sonoma, it'd be really exciting.
It'd be something. It'd certainly be something. And, you know, if we're talking about guys who are running in the low two teens for a marathon, that's a little bit of a different world than even some of these, you know, faster American and European runners that we've seen come into the sport in the last few years. I mean, you know, we talk all the time about Jim and Sage and Max and, you know, guys who have run 220 or 218 or 216 even, but from 216 to 212 or 213, which it sounds like where these guys were, that's a world of difference.
Yeah.
And it might get very, very interesting.
Yeah, it really could. I mean, I'd be really excited to see it happen. Just, you know, mixing up some of these races, it'll be impressive stuff.
One other thing I wanted to touch on before two other things. One was I wanted to talk a little bit about Camille Herron, the reigning Ultra Runner of the Year, one of the dominant athletes in our sport today for sure, has had a bit of an up and down early part of the year. It sounds like she's, you know, progressing well towards her main goals for the year. But, you know, we saw her out at Bandera this year where we didn't speak about her earlier on in the episode, but, you know, she ran to a very easy win there. But not up to her usual standards, at least what we would have expected from time-wise or, you know, performance-wise there. Like I said, unchallenged completely, won by over an hour. But barely breaking 10 hours at a race where, given her other successes, I would have expected her to be under 9 hours.
And that would have given her a course record there. But
I think that would have been, as, you know, as somebody who has nowhere near her amount of talent and has run under 9:30 on that course, she certainly could have run under 9 hours, I think. And we had a pretty good weather day.
We did. Yep.
You know, she was out a little hard and it sounded like she went through some bad patches. And my guess is kind of just went into, let me just get this done mode.
Yeah. She was so far out ahead. I mean, that it didn't really matter,
but it was a little bit of an eye opener. And then for her, she came back a little while later and, you know, made a fairly well-publicized attempt on the 24-hour world record, wound up having to drop out at about 11 hours and wound up in the hospital with some early rhabdomyolysis, which is kind of some muscle breakdown, which, you know, can be a problem, although not uncommon, certainly, in the ultra-running world. On a scale of 1 to 10, are you concerned at all about Camille? Is she overraced? Is she kind of trying to do a little bit too much?
Maybe she's a little overraced, but I think, you know, she's going to be sensible. You know, States is coming up. I think she's got, you know, other races on the horizon. I think she's going to be smart. She's done enough racing and she has so much talent. She's going to dial things back, get a good program focused on doing well at States, and she's going to do well.
I think if she runs conservatively at States, she's going to be very difficult to beat. If she tries to do what she tried to do last year and just hammer off the front, and it's hard to blame her. She was coming off, you know, a career-defining win at Comrades, and I'm sure felt amazing. But, you know, a 100-mile trail race is a different animal. And I think if she runs within herself early and can get to, like we always say, to Forest Hill, you know, with legs left on her, nobody's going to beat her. But, it, you know, that's kind of the trick. You know, the other question I had with her, and this just came up recently. I saw she had answered some questions on social media about her training, basically saying basically saying her long run, I mean, she still, for the most part, trains like a road marathoner. Her long run rarely, she said, exceeds 20 to 25 miles. She does not do back-to-back long runs. She said on a long day, she'll go 20 miles in the morning, she'll do a shakeout jog in the afternoon, and, you know, it's not like she's coming back and doing another 20 to 25 the next day. She's still training like the elite road marathoner that she is, and it's served her very well in road ultras up to 100K, in really what I would call road or track ultras up to even 100 miles, where obviously she set that amazing world record at 100 miles last year and the 12-hour world record last year at Desert Solstice. The 24-hour race and the longer, and the more extended trail ultras are a bit of a different animal. And I wonder if she's going to need to make some adjustments in her training. Far be it from me to second guess her training, but here I go. I wonder if she's going to have to make some adjustments for races that are going to last for more than 14 or 15 or 16 hours, if she's not going to really be able to get by on just a long run of 25 miles, just from a muscular damage standpoint. And we saw that kind of come into play at the 24-hour event.
Yeah.
I wonder if, I mean, the fact that she's able to run 100 miles at 13 hours, sub 13 hours on that training is amazing. That, you know, for a 25-mile long run, that may be the limit of how far she's going to be able to push that. And states, you know, even if she breaks the course record, is going to take her 17 hours?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the DNF at the 24-hour, a little case of the rhabdo, you know, maybe that's a wake-up call for her. Maybe that's like, maybe I need to do something different here.
I wonder.
You know, there's no one style of training that fits everyone. And then, you know, it's a work in progress. A lot of the time you adjust and you tweak and you figure out what's better for you. So maybe that DNF and the rhabdo, maybe that's something that's going to cause her to adjust her training program, and think about, some other things that she can do. So I don't know. I mean, she's going to run well. It's going to be exciting out there in States. I know you're going out there.
Oh yeah. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. The biggest story in the running world this week, obviously, was Boston. We were recording a few days after Des Linden's amazing performance there and some great racing and obviously truly epic conditions. I'm not going to get too far into that sort of stuff, but any ultra running performances from Boston, from some of the names that we kind of know and love that stuck out to you?
Jorge Maravilla.
Oh, yeah.
2:35. I think decent. You know, I mean, based on look at the times.
Solid in the conditions.
Good run from him. I think Ian Sharman ran the double there,
yes,
as well.
I think that. Yes, ran
the crazy
the,
Englishman
from
came
the
out there
to the start, turned around and ran. I think a sub 3:10 on the way back.
3:08, I think it was. there was a guy who ran a double though, 104.8 miles, and
I did not see that.
I think his time was around Henry Ward. His time is around 24 hours. I think it was a shade over 24 hours. Double-double.
That's not bad in those conditions.
No, I think it's very good. I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, what a great marathon. I mean, it was kind of as close to an ultra as you get, you know? Conditions that we've all run in before.
Yeah. Some good stuff from Wardian as well, who seems to always be on the scene.
Yep.
Paced a blind runner to sub 3 hours. They were going for, I think, a 2:40 or so. But, you know, in those conditions to be able to get a visually impaired runner to a 2:56 or so was pretty amazing. Sage and Alex Varner, obviously disappointing days, just battled some hypothermia.
Yeah, tough. I wanted to see Sage do well as well. I mean, you know, I follow that guy and I really wanted to have a good race.
Yeah.
And, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Especially as an ultra runner, you think you know better.
The thing that struck me about him, I think we mentioned this when we were talking earlier on our run, he had less clothing on than almost anybody I saw in that race.
Yep.
I mean, he had a singlet and arm sleeves.
Yeah. And that was not enough on that day.
Not enough on that day, unfortunately. Yeah. The one thing I kind of hope for him is that he takes one more crack at the trials qualifier before he gets into kind of mountain season.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, kind of having to be forced out at 18 miles, maybe before he did too much damage to his body, maybe he can bounce back quickly and find another place to take a crack at that before we get later in the season. I mean, he's got, you know, 2 years obviously to try and get that fourth Olympic trials qualifier, or fourth time in the Olympic trials marathon, if I am remembering correctly. Okay, that's pretty good. Let's just talk about for a sec anything upcoming. Like I said, we're going to try and do these probably monthly. And so do you have anything that you're looking forward to in the next few weeks before we come back and kind of recap some stuff? Any races on the horizon that you're excited to see what happens?
Sorry to see what happens at Bighorn, because I'm going to be there.
We'll talk before
that's,
then. That's
pretty exciting. Nothing really. You know, a couple of weeks, we got the Bear Mountain North Face series of races, 50-mile, 50K.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, some local good, some East Coast bit of action there. So it's kind of cool to see that going on.
Yep. Yep. Canyon's coming up next weekend.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Although I briefly scanned the start list. You know, not super deep, but Paul Giblin's going to be over from the UK. That'll be interesting to see him go up against some of the guys. Kat Bradley coming back to defend her title against Corinne Malcolm and a couple other top ladies. UROC has some really big names this year.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
That'll be good.
Yeah. Brian Rizecki, who was there last year, Jim Sweeney, both of them were in the top five last year. But Tyler Siegel from Wisconsin is just a beast, and he's going to be there. Zach Marin.
He won at Cayuga 2 years ago, was it?
2 years ago.
Yeah, impressive time.
Very, very impressive. If not a course record, very close. Yeah. And I saw Ian Sharman's name on the start list there as well, which that'll be fun to see. Some good women on the women's side also. Amy Rizecki, Amanda Basham, as mentioned. Sarah Keyes, another New Yorker. Yeah. And our good friend Laura Klein is going
down
as well.
Laura Klein, yep.
And then Miwok, I think, is right around the same time as well with some good names. One very under-the-radar storyline coming up next weekend, just to keep an eye on, Gary Gellin, a great runner from Mill Valley area, has just turned 50, and he is targeting the 50 to 54 age group American record for 50 miles. Out here, he's flying out to Connecticut for Lake Waramong. Nice flat, fast road course.
Right, I know that. I've looked at it. Yeah, it just runs round and round the lake, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. 5:35 is the American record, and that age group record has stood for, I believe, 38 years.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of those American road records are from the 70s and 80s, and he's going to take a shot at it. So that'll be something fun to look out for in the next couple of weeks. All right, Phil. Thank you very much for coming. I'm psyched that you've agreed to do this.
It was kind of an absolute pleasure.
This is, you know, something that I think will be a lot of fun for us to kind of, you know, just translate our normal mid-run conversations into podcast form while we drink a couple of beers. So thank you very much for the beer. Let's plug that one again. It was the Sloop. What was it?
Juice Bomb. Sloop Juice Bomb.
Very good for any East Coasters that want to check that one out. We did not get to crack open the Industrial Arts. Maybe we'll do that next time. Okay, for Phil Vondra and myself, I am Jay Friedman. Thank you guys for joining us tonight on The Pain Cave. And until next time, keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Broken down and beaten up. The years have been long and tough, but I'm not dead. Happy now just to spend some time with friends and have a roof above my head. I'm not jaded, just been faded. Like a good old pair of jeans, rusted like a proud old car that's drove a little too far and seen too much rain. But long ago, as a child, I look at that the night sky in wild wonder, man. Then ride the bus and feel upset to think of all the years I'd have to go through there. I was still young. I was still